Now it's time for Homegrown, Charlottesville's only show dedicated to local art, with your hosts, David Munn Strong and Leslie M. Scott Jones. Now, here's David and Leslie.
Well, I'm not about sucking toes, but I mean, I'll do anything on the first day.
Hey, Sunday.
God.
We are up. We are in. It is 10 o'clock, and this is Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, your show about local art, brought to you by Blue Moon Diner. It is January the 29th, and we are in the end of days.
We are.
Oh, my God.
It's coming.
You know,
the end is near.
I didn't think it would be my second show where... We would address this. You know,
I thought it would take a little longer.
I thought we would get 14 days into the Trump.
Yeah, apparently not.
Nightmare.
No.
Before total bedlam wreaked the nation.
Wow.
Every airport, every major airport has some type of thing going down, some type of protest, and rightfully so.
Rightfully so. So yeah, so the taxi cab drivers in New York have done a little strike, have refused to pick up or drop off from JFK. And I think similar things are going on in San Francisco and Chicago and all that. So yeah. So you know, if you're flying, I hope you brought some sort of, you know, bed clothes or something. She might be in the airport for a little bit.
Gotta be looking like Tom Hanks.
Right.
Hope you got sleeping bag. God. But, I can't even expect. There are social media proclamations of how people are ashamed to be Americans at this point in time.
Oh, yeah.
I just think that's riveting when we go from, you know, a time where we express our one American right and utilize it only to see that it's kind of BS. And
this is
what you get.
I need to give a little shout out, a little appreciation to one of our owners who came in before the show and pulled me aside and basically said, "So basically, we're calling ourselves Resistance Radio from now on." And that's what I want you to say. I'm like, awesome. Yeah.
Well,
right on, dude.
Hashtag Resistance Radio, because, I mean, we are the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and I am, by all sense of the imagination, a progressive.
Yep.
And this is not progress. If anything, this is the complete opposite of progress and of human decency at this moment.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Let a brother get a hotel room,
right.
You know, something.
No. They detained people that were in the air when this thing was signed.
Right.
And, I mean, these are American citizens. They have lived here their entire lives.
Which also shows that they didn't really think this thing through.
Well, gee, I wonder if that's a sign of something. Let's see. We elected an idiot. That's what we did. We elected an idiot. So the fact that he didn't think before he did something. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, Okay.
Yeah. So I just want to say thank you for giving me the opportunity to have this show for as little time as, you know, as we'll be here,
you know,
on this earth. Because if we ain't going to be shipped off and thrown into a volcano,
we
just going to die by fire. And I'm just glad to have known you. And you too, Courtney.
I am glad to have known you as well, David.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad to know our guest here in the studio. It is the lovely Linda Zuby.
Zuby in the house.
Zuby in the house. She is directing Love Letters by A.R. Gurney, which is going on at Four County Players in the Cellar this February 3rd, probably the last February 3rd, to the February 12th. Linda, first of all, thank you for being here on Homegrown.
Glad to be here.
Your grace and your presence. So tell us about the show. Tell us about Love Letters.
Love Letters.
Stop me if I'm incorrect, but the two players are actually, in
they're a married couple.
Yes. Yes, they are in love.
They are in love.
And, I assume they have sent letters to each other. I know, right?
Ew.
People love each other now?
Yeah,
nowadays?
It happens.
All right.
It happens occasionally.
So tell
yeah.
me about these lovebirds. What's going on in love letters?
Well, it's an interesting setup for this show in that I'm in the room with a bunch of people who know theater, so it's not a regular, let's do a scene and talk to each other. They are literally reading their letters that they're writing to each other.
Yeah, so it's reader's theater.
So it's like reader's theater. They read it, but and they don't interact.
Oh, wow. Ever. Yeah, they don't
they're
even
out,
look at
they're reading
other.
Their letters.
Right.
And
because
set
that's
up.
How it would be when you read a letter
when you,
from somebody
Yep, exactly,
else.
Reading and writing. And so there, it's a really interesting setup. Huh. And I'm lucky to have Ken Waller and his wife, Linda Poser, are retired professional actors. They've been hitting the boards for forever, and they've retired to Lake Monticello. God love them. And they agreed to come out and do this show with me. And
is it something that they've been doing for?
They've never done the show together before. They've worked together, but not this show. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So it's been fun spending time with them. They're both lovely people, and professional actors. They are professional actors.
Oh,
they're just amazing, and just like boom, they've been on it, and rehearsal process has been lovely, and obviously you don't have to rehearse for 8 weeks solid or anything like that because it's read. They just have to be familiar with what they're reading. Mm-hmm. So
I'm sure their chemistry is just abysmal.
Hardcore exercises and stuff to get them to
style
communicate.
Direct.
So it's been
and all of that.
A few
yeah.
retreats, you know, send them off. You know.
Yeah, that's been really rough. Yeah. So anyway, yeah.
So the story of Love Letters, it's basically these two people who meet when they're young. Right?
Like they kids,
meet,
like tweens or something like that. Yeah,
meet in like middle school or something.
And there's an invite to, it starts with an invitation to like a kid's party.
Right, a birthday party or something.
It's like, you know, I accept the invitation of blah, blah, blah. And it just goes from there and they write and correspond their whole lives.
Yeah, so basically they fall in love and it's never consummated.
This kind of thing. Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you think about your own life and who you have communication with, you may be really close to someone, and you kind of drift apart when you go to school, and then you get a Christmas card.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, oh yeah, hey Leslie, it's been a couple years. How are you? And you communicate a lot for a while, and then you drift apart again. So it's like it kind of weaves together these two lives when they intersect and when they don't.
Right.
When they're on opposite coasts and opposite places in their lives and stuff, and it's really beautiful. I was kind of concerned at first. It's like how do you when you have people as good as Ken and Linda, everything is communicated really strongly, and so it's been really nice. In the cellar space, I know Clinton's performed in it with me recently. It's a small space. It is literally the cellar out at Fort County Players, and
Super intimate,
and I've rearranged the seating for this particular production, so it's really tied in. You kind of feel like you're sitting in the library or the living room with these people. You know,
I
really pulled it in tight because there's no need. I mean, there's no need
for big place space.
Yeah,
they don't go nowhere.
So, and it's really kind of cool to be. And I mean, they're right there, as close as I am to y'all here in your studio.
Right.
You're as close to Linda and Ken as they're. Recreating these two lives, so it's been really nice.
Did I'm just sorry that they're not here with us right now. Did they have like a relationship like that they corresponded with? Because I guess they were together through all this time. But did they have, a kind of relationship very very close and very intimate, with that same type of correspondence like that?
That's a good question. We didn't talk about that in our various conversations that we had. I'm sure that when they were both working professionally, there were times when they were apart for a long time. And as you all know, we don't write letters so much anymore.
Right, right.
Yeah,
but they did. That's how they kept in touch.
That's how they kept in touch.
It's definitely a lost art.
Yeah.
So
I had a friend of mine over for lunch a few months ago, and she's so sweet. She wrote me a handwritten thank you note and mailed it to me, and I got it, and I'm like, oh my God, this is so cool. Like, anybody else would have just sent an email, but she like took the time to sit down.
To handwrite a note.
And write a note. Like, there is something special about sitting, taking the time to sit down and write something specifically for somebody else.
And that, raise your hand if you still get excited when you go to your mailbox and there's something in it besides junk.
Right.
Yeah, it's a handwritten note. It's
Yeah.
It's even more rare now in this day and age where that actually happens. So I guess that would lead me into my next question. Because our next guest, the play Well is about generations, and I want to tie all of this in together. Do you think that, you know, the love letter, so to speak, do you think that romance is dead after the 21st century? You know, has it just, like, been cut down to emojis and,
and texts,
you know, and happy cat pics, like, in memes? Like, you know, because, you know, I will confide, I was, you know, seeing this young lady for a little bit after I got back. And when we corresponded, there was not a lot of words. There was just a lot of pictures and text and cute stuff, and but not a lot of, like, actual, like, heartfelt,
David,
is how I feel.
David, you got to stop dating them young ones, man. You got to stop dating the young ones. They don't know nothing.
We don't get to that afterwards.
Yeah. That's a discussion for later. Yeah.
No, we'll talk. All right.
But back to you.
To me.
Not about me. Do you think that romance is dead? Do you think that the idea of that type of correspondence, that type of deep, intimate conversation.
Yeah, that connection.
Is lost in this generation. Poke at millennials.
I think it has been lost. So it's even been lost. I'm older than all y'all in the room. It's just kind of lost, period. I don't think it's even generational. I think that we've all kind of gotten lazy. And we assume that the electronic communication is just as personal, and it's not.
It's not.
It's totally not. And the nice thing I think about this play is it kind of makes you go, yeah, that's special. That means something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, we've even talked about sometimes people, like, just when they draft maybe a memo or whatever, they're doing it so quickly electronically they don't even know what they're saying half the time. And I find I always make myself slow down, and in my Catholic schoolgirl penmanship, slow down and write it out. And you think more clearly, and you've slowed down and you really put your thoughts together.
Yeah, I mean, even, you know, and I think that even translate into our work lives, because, you know, when I'm in the middle of something at work, if I sit down and write it out, I'm all of a sudden more engaged with it, and I remember
more thoughtful.
I'm more thoughtful about it. I remember it. Mm-hmm. You know, this sitting in, and there, I think there have actually been studies done for all these kids. You know, now they're, you know, sitting in class taking notes on their iPad. And they have found that they don't remember the facts as well. Because
they just record it. They just record it.
They're recording it. They're not remembering it because they don't have to write the words out.
Yeah, there's no process. It's just like, okay, I'm typing it and then done. Okay, I wrote it down.
Regurgitation information.
Exactly.
All right. Cool. And on that note, we're going to take a little break. Yeah. Clinton.
Hey, it is 16 past the hour. This is Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC, the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville. And this is your show about local art, brought to you by Blue Moon Diner. And we are talking with Linda Zuby about the play Love Letters that she has directed with awesome, awesome actors going down at Four County this February the 3rd through the 12th. And we, just to pick up the conversation that we had before the break, we were talking about actual letters, how people don't write them anymore, and that sucks, because, like, even when you were discussing, like, the synopsis of the play, like, my eyes welled up, because I can't imagine a type of, like, connection like that happening in the time of here and now. And you know, I think that's really disheartening.
I would agree. I mean, all of us, I think, when we were kids, you had that little stack of letters in a little cigar box or shoe box or stuff from your camp friends or whoever, and you had a stack and you kept them. And now
and every once in a while you could pull them out
and
read them
and do whatever. Yeah. And, like, recently, a good friend of my husband's mom passed, and it was somebody we knew, and she had saved all the letters.
Yeah.
From that friend and sent them over so we could see them and read them. And there's this big stack of letters, and it's just not the same opening a folder in your email. You know, it's just not the same.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even think they teach cursive in school anymore.
I know, like, there's been arguments about it. Yeah, I don't even know if they take the time. You're right. And they teach keyboarding.
Right. Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. But I was that type of kid that saw the cursive board and was just doing that in my spare time while I was bored in class, and I was already like,
well, let's face it, you're a little weird, David.
I'm a big fat nerd.
Maybe you should be a calligrapher, Dave.
I did actually do a little bit of that back in the day, but that's another story.
It's another life.
That's the love letters I would write. I feel like that I definitely need to see this play.
I actually directed love letters when I was in college for my directing class.
Really?
Yeah. It's a really fun show. It's and mostly because their relationship, you know, because you know how you have that friend that doesn't matter how long it's been since you've seen them or talked to them, but as soon as you see them or talk to them, it's like instant.
It's like high or low or wherever you are.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
There has been, it's like there has been no time between you two. Like that's what I enjoyed about the relationship in this play a lot, is that it didn't matter where they were in their lives. They were always connected with each other. And whenever they needed each other, there was always a letter coming. And it was really nice. It was really nice.
And there's a certain level of trust to that type of commitment. Because there could be a time where that person just doesn't feel like that this is worth doing.
Oh, yeah.
And oh, yeah. That's very, there's disagreements.
There
yeah. Definitely.
The fights are really good, actually.
They're really good.
Well, there needs
mostly
to be conflict.
Mostly because the chick in it is a little crazy. I mean, there are reasons for her crazy. But
she's less conservative than he is. We'll put it that way.
I don't want to.
Yes.
Generalization.
So it is definitely, that's the best way to put it without giving too much away.
Well,
so, yeah.
Well, speaking of connection, was it, because, you know, these actors are, you know, Broadway talented, so I'm sure they, you know, got a lot up their sleeves, so I'm sure this was a no-brainer. But was it hard for that connection to be addressed when they're not physically connecting with each other on the stage, per se, when they don't really address each other?
So I think because they do have this longstanding personal relationship, it was easier probably for them than two actors who didn't know each other as well to establish the relationship. It's been great watching them. I mean, I've worked with both of them in various degrees over the last, you know, since they've been here, I think, since they've been back in Charlottesville area. And it was really great to tap into their own relationship. Mm. And it made it easier, I think, for them to be able to...
So something to draw from, yeah.
Totally draw from it, yeah.
And as a director, is there something that you learned from these actors during the whole process that you'll take with you in the future productions and, you know, just in your,
Oh, well, no, definitely. I think, both of them, their grace, they're just these beautiful, open people that have been doing this for a really long time and just like to dip their toe back in every once in a while now. And this was kind of a package deal. It was either them or we weren't going to, I wasn't going to do it. I was like, you know, I didn't want to have an audition in cast. I was like, we've got these perfect people.
Right.
And so we've kind of like been trying to figure this out for the last couple of years to do this out of Four County Players. So, the fact that the timing was right and here we are and we're going to do this and go.
That's great.
And I think what I've learned, watching them is sometimes it's just good acting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nothing.
Yeah.
Else, it's just here's the book, here's the words.
That's
go.
The thing about Reader's Theater, not just this play, but about any
in general,
Reader's
yeah.
Theater project. It has to be about the acting, like it, because there's nothing else. It is just the words, and it's just the deliverance of those words. And so you mentioned that you changed the space. So is it now a full thrust, or
it's a full thrust? There's seating on three sides. Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, and it's really seating's like 56 to 58 people.
Okay.
I mean, it's really that intimate,
right.
And so you're really close to them, and you can see every twitch of their eyeball and stuff like that. And it's really nice, and they're both so skilled, and it's also we've discovered that the simpler you treat it,
yeah,
you can't get too emotional with it. You can't go like over the top, big dramatic things.
Yeah.
It's just, you just sit there and it just washes, you know, the words just wash over you. And it's just really beautiful. And the way you get involved in their lives, you want to know, it's like, whoa, why didn't she respond to that letter? Why, what, where is he? Why isn't he? Where is she? You know, and you just, you start just sitting there watching this play out. And it's just because these two people are so skilled at what they're doing that you're just riveted by by what they're doing.
Well, that's, this sounds awesome. I've loved this play for a really long time. So I'm hoping.
Hope you get out there. I know everybody's schedules.
Yeah, with schedules. Yes. You know, see, that's the problem with doing
us theater geeks. Yeah.
The problem with doing theater is that you never get to see theater.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I was going to say, though. Oh, you should come and see my project. Oh, well, I can't because I'm rehearsing. But you should come and see my project.
But yeah,
I can't because I'm doing this.
But thank you, Linda, so much.
Hey, thank you all.
To talk to us. This has been great.
Four County Players, February 3rd through 12th.
Oh, my
yes,
God.
3rd through 12th.
This is going to be beautiful.
So,
I can't wait to see
they
it.
Can get tickets through the Four County website.
Four County website. FourCP.org or call the box office 540-832-5355.
Yeah, that's right. Talk to our friend Ro. She'll get you set up.
She'll get us set up. Yeah. Yep.
Thank you so much, Linda.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Now I can go home and do laundry.
laundry.
Before I have to go to the theater.
Cool. So, yep, it's still 25 of the hour. We're still at home, girl. We're still doing our thing. What's going on? People are asking me in Charlottesville. Hey, David, what's going on? What's going on?
David, why don't you tell us what's going on, David?
I'm
going
to tell you what's going on. What's some of the artistic events happening this week? Oh, February 1st is the Eyes on Art Tour, an innovative program in partnership with the Arts Fusion Program of the Central and Western Virginia Chapter of the Alzheimer's Association that engages people with Alzheimer's in meaningful discussions about art. So it really helps out those people. Check it out. The second is Books on Tap with the Jefferson Madison Regional Library and Champion Brewery at Champion, Mislaid by Neil Zink. Books and beer, my two favorite things. February 3rd through the 25th is Well at Live Arts Theater. February 3rd is Jose Badia's Memoria y Creencia Culturales. Memory and Cultural Belief is what that stands for. And I'm going to work on pronouncing that. February 3rd through 12th is also A.R. Gurney's Love Letters at Four County Players, which I just discussed. February 4th, Theater at the Oppressed Workshop by Mecca Burns and Brad Stoller at Piedmont Virginia Community College. February 4th through the 5th, UVA Spanish Department presents The Imposter, a play for demagogues in Spanish by Rodolfo Usigli at the Helms Theater in UVA. On the 4th is an artist curator talk with Jose Badia and Tosha Grantham at the 2nd Street Gallery. Also on the 4th is Charlottesville Writer House Seminar, How a Draft Becomes a Novel, in which novelist Hannah Barnaby will lead a variety of exercises, to help writers diagnose problems in their manuscript. That's something that sounds like I need to do as well. February 5th and 6th is auditions for Dancing with Myself, a teen arts production, a teen dramedy about seven high school girls and the labels they've been forced to wear at Four County Players. I should get my niece to go out for that. February 5th is auditions for non-singing roles in two Victory Hall Opera productions. For info, go to web.victoryhallopera.org/auditions. And your music options for this week. Today, the Ravana String Quartet at Old Cowboy Hall. Tonight is Salsa Sunday at the Ante Room. Also tonight is Travis Elliott at Rapture. On the 31st is Bob Huntington at Fellini's and Travis Elliott at Fellini's after that. February 1st is the Round Town Get Down Band at Dirty Nelly's. Also, February 1st is Jazz Collective No. 9 at Fellini's. February 2nd is the Michael Ellswick Gathering at Fellini's. Also, the Corey Hunt Band is doing some original Southern Rock at Fellini's. February 2nd is the Uwala Collective with the Blenders at the Ante Room. On the 3rd is the Open Music Jam at James River Brewery. Full Tones to the Max at Dirty Nelly's. Grateful Dead Night with Mama Trident and the Cows at Villa Sports Bar and Ultra Lounge. Helen Lunsford Trio with Isabel Bailey and Pro Renata Farm Brewery. Faster Than Walking at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Tin Whistle's been kicking them out lately. And the 4th, LG and Friends. Is that the phone company? don't know. LG and Friends at the Whiskey Jar. Also on the 4th is Jim Wave at Albemarle Cider Works. John Dirth at Fellini's. Alex Kevin and Friends at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Bobby Midnight Band at Pro Renata Farm Brewery. And every Monday is Singer-Songwriter Night at the Local. Every Tuesday, Traditional Irish Session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Every Tuesday also is Open Mic Night at the Ante Room. Actually, that's not true anymore. Jan canceled that, so there's no more Open Mic Night at the Ante Room. But there is Open Mic Night every Wednesday at Pro Renata Farm Brewery. And Jazz Collective at Fellini's. And Mike Rosinski and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. And every Thursday, John Dirth Quintet at Miller's. If you're an artist, you got an event, you want people to know about it, you want to tell them, tell us at Homegrown. We'll put you on. We'll blow you up. web.facebook.com/homegrownwpvc or email us at homegrown947@gmail.com. Woohoo!
This is Eli Cook, and you're listening to Homegrown on 94.7.
Yes, it is 27 minutes past the hour. My name is David. This is Homegrown, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
Resistance Radio, people.
Resistance Radio, all day, every day.
And our next guest.
Yep. Blue Moon Diner. I lost my thingy right there. But
you lost your thingy?
Oh, boom. Mm. Breakfast all day. Hey, stop it. Look. Look,
sorry, that
was an opening. Spicer is listening.
Okay.
So
all right,
calm
go
it
ahead.
Down. Breakfast all day, every day. Brunch on Saturdays and Sundays. And carefully, ever so carefully construct diner food on weekday afternoons and evenings. And speaking of evenings, Blue Moon is nice enough to provide a venue for local and visiting artists. This week, Wednesday, Jim Wave. Thursday, Mojo Pie. Friday, Blues and Stuff. Also known as Ken Waxman and Friends. And Blue Moon Diner is located at 512 West Main Street. Trump got me shook.
Have another sip of coffee, David.
It is a place. It is a place.
All right.
Blue Moon Diner. All right.
Our next guest. Oh, my goodness. We are so just delighted and happy to have the director, the star, and the producer of Well at Live Arts, Larry Goldstein, Larry, Deborah Arnstein, and John Conover. Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, thank you, Leslie.
Good morning.
Delighted to be here.
Aww.
And we're going to go to Blue Moon sometime this
week. There you go.
Hey, I hear it's a place.
So, you know, full disclosure, I am also in Well.
We have Leslie here.
So, Larry, tell us about Well. Tell us about how you came to direct this lovely piece.
Well, I was given the chance by the good folks at Live Arts. They sent me the script, and I immediately loved it. There was this great story about a woman and her mother. I mean, the woman is so daring. And she wants to tell so many things to the audience, but she wants to include her mother, one of the rare things in life, an artist who puts her mother on stage with her. And her mother just sits there in her own home, and then the show begins, because mom doesn't sit still. She wants to give drinks to the audience.
Right?
She wants to make sure everybody's comfortable. She wants to make sure her daughter does a great job.
And it's not her actual mother in the play, because we did just a... husband and wife.
We are in the realm of theater.
Yes.
So, sure, her biological mother is not on stage, okay. But for all intents and purposes...
I'm sure she wants to be.
Well, maybe so.
We just will cleaning that face off.
That would be an awesome moment. Mom runs out of the audience.
That's my baby. You can act all you want, but that's my baby.
You know what? David, your mother has done that.
She will.
She's coming into the studio right now.
Pushed over the edge.
David and I did a show. I'm surprised
she hasn't texted me already.
David and I did a show at Play On a few years ago.
It's about me.
And seriously, no, it
I'm
was so
to
great.
Because
at this point, I knew David's mother, but I didn't know it was David's mother. And he and I are in a scene. And if we yell out something, you know, part of the scene and everything, and his mom stands up and goes, "That's right!" And under his breath, right next to me, David goes, "That's my mom." And I was like, "That's awesome!
awesome. I have to meet her now.
Wow. Well, I think in the roots of theater, that's what's supposed to happen. The folks in the audience know the story, and they'll improve on what you're doing.
Yeah.
They're going to shout it out, and that's what we're going
to
all have.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good to have fans. It's good to have fans. So, what's up?
So Deb.
Yes.
Get in there. So, for those of you who don't know how this play is structured, Deb pretty much has all the lines.
I talk a lot.
She talks a lot. Basically, you leave the stage like twice for like 30 seconds.
That's right. That's right.
And of course, you know, I've been in the rehearsal process with you, but for those people who haven't, what is that like to have so much of a show on you?
Well, I never thought about it like that until now, so thanks.
Just a little help, you know.
Right. So it has evolved into feeling sort of like I'm running a marathon every night because I don't sort of get a chance to go off stage and escape and decompress, really. So even when I'm on stage and not talking, I'm still obviously present and in the moment. So keeping my energy up is really, really important. And the great thing about having you and the rest of the ensemble on stage is you guys provide so much great energy for me that makes a big difference. And because a lot of the time I'm talking to the audience, having an audience there is going to be incredibly like supercharged for me.
Yeah.
Having folks. And I think for everyone, hearing the laughter and getting the places that it's really incredibly poignant and funny. And anyway, I'm really looking forward to sharing this with lots of folks.
Right. I'm sure you put a lot of heart and soul into it because, like, a lot of people, you know, look forward to being, you know, the lead or the principal of the play, and then the director's like, oh, well, you have to be on stage all the time through the entire thing. So I guess they strap a diaper on you. They pass water bottles through the scenes.
We do product placement for Depends.
Nice.
Okay.
Nice.
Gross.
Oh, and Powerade. all day long.
Well, the other really interesting sort of meta twist on this is that the woman that wrote this play, it was her on stage. So this is her story. So I'm playing a real person who is playing herself. So you can sort of start to go down a rabbit hole of meta with this play around, you know, what point did I decide to hire these actors? When is it me, Deborah, the actress? When is it Lisa, the character, being the actress or being the director?
Elaborate on that. Did you find similarities between you and this character and how her mother kind of overwhelms?
Wow. Is my mom listening? That's my first question.
No, she's not listening. It's okay. We didn't tell her about this particular interview.
It's all right. Silence. This is therapy.
Right.
Just get it out.
You know,
Believe me, nobody watches this show.
I think it really points to the way that we see and remember our parents and then the way they really are or how the world sees them, right? So I know for my mom, who I have a great relationship with, who lives in Richmond and who also, you know, is a mom and can be frustrating and all those things.
Hi, Judy.
you know, people see her behavior, stuff that drives me crazy. They're like, oh, your mom's so sweet. She's so, and I know she is, but it's still like nails on a chalkboard sometimes. And that's what happens for her in this play. It's really incredibly clear how frustrating she is for me and how much everyone else thinks she's just
amazing.
Right. And, you know, how do you integrate those two worlds? Because we do think our moms are amazing and they also pluck our strings.
Right.
I am a mom. I don't ever do that, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I'm a mom too, and I never do
that. Never.
I don't know where people get that
from. We broke the cycle.
We did.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so there's lots of really beautiful resonant things here for mothers, for daughters, for families, for dads, for, you know, actors, for anyone that has a mom, is a mom, loves a mom, is frustrated by a mom.
So I was more curious about, because with our previous guest, we were talking about how actual letters aren't written anymore. And that's kind of like a generational thing that has gone by the wayside. Talk about the generational differences that people might identify with in this production. Like anything
with that, yeah.
Sure. Well, there's two things that come to mind right away. So it takes us back into the late 60s, 70s, okay. early 80s. And one of the things that it looks at are health concerns. And there's a strong belief in allergies as the center of wellness. Hmm. You know, so if you're allergic to things, whether it's formaldehyde to, plastics, or the auto emissions in your hair, you know, people are sensitive to that. So they're going to bring up talk the way it might have occurred back in those days. Hmm. And then there's another part of our cultural evolution, which was integration. Hmm. And so the lead character's mom wanted her family, who were white, to live in a black neighborhood. And so she went about to make this an integrated neighborhood that was healthy. And so there's a conversation about that evolves in the show. Mm-hmm. So those two themes, I mean, though they're still important today, how we deal with wellness and how we deal with race and difference are important. It shows it from a point of view of late 70s, early 80s, mm-hmm. and today.
Right. Yeah, those are pretty two timeless issues that kind of like keep hitting hard. I was saying more on the aspect of how could I put this? Back to this nerve grating. How because I can relate.
Honey, sit up.
Oh, sorry, mom.
You know, mom. Posture is atrocious.
It's not about me.
Right.
It's about the people.
Right.
That we're talking.
Sure.
She can't conduct an interview slouching. Sign.
That's
my God.
Right.
I'm completely thrown off now.
Yes.
Welcome to my whole 100-minute life on stage.
That's what
happened to you now.
I see you in your character.
Why don't you say what happens when you're 13? Tell them that.
Yes.
The lines from the show.
Oh, what is that thing about being around your parents that makes you feel like a 13-year-old? I mean, you know, you grow up, you start your own life, you move away, you do therapy, you get some distance, and after a while, you start to be able to see your parents really clearly, right? And you think, the next time I go home, I'm really going to be able to help them out. But when you get home, what you realize is your parents lived in this alternate universe where your therapy has no power, right? I mean, that's basically what she realizes, is you can leave home and have your stuff together, and then mm-hmm. you get home, and it's like you're, bam, right back where you were.
Right.
Well, and I think it's also, that's how we grow up, right? I mean, we all start out believing that our parents are omniscient, you know,
yeah.
that they know everything, that they're these, you know, superpower, you know, they have superpowers.
Right.
And as you grow up, you realize that, oh no, they're just people just like me.
Yeah.
And they were trying to do it the best way they knew how.
Right.
Just like me in
that's
this
right.
moment. And, oh, look, they failed, too. Like, it's,
yeah, but that's a big thing to give up, is that
yeah.
thing of, oh, they
to,
were.
Yeah, to let that go is
yeah.
huge.
And I have to let go of my superpowers, too.
There are
I haven't
so many,
yet.
There are so many things I could say in this moment, Larry. Yeah, okay. We're just going to move on.
Awkward.
Awkward.
All right, I will bury my superpowers in the shallow sand.
For the people that have seen the show, talk more about the what you guys did as an ensemble cast to kind of, you know, gel and kind of create that chemistry a little bit more.
Leslie.
Well, for the ensemble, it was interesting because there's four people in the ensemble, and only like two of us knew each other. So it was me and Edwina, and I were the only two people that like had a relationship outside of being cast in this show. So there was a process of like getting to know each other and being comfortable enough to trust each other, because there's a lot of really powerful emotion in this show.
So director Larry steps in, and we do something called playback theater, where people tell stories from their lives and we act them out for each other, which is essentially a model of what happens in the play.
Right.
Because they're doing that for Lisa Crone, the main character. They're acting out her stories. So we did that with each other. And when you see actors being generous with each other that way, and then we test each other essentially without knowing it, can you hear me? can you get what my story's about? And they did that for each other, and this is it's an awesome ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
There, Finn and Kiri and Edwina and Leslie are the ensemble, and then there's Patricia, who is the mother. And so all of, along with Deb, all of us have been working together, and Kathleen, who's there every day as the stage manager, and you build this family. And it's one of the neat things about a theater company is that you don't know each other, you haven't worked together, you have different styles, and then basically about the time you finish the show, it's like we're a company, we're ready to work together. Mm-hmm. It's just that we have to get there by the time we open.
And so yeah.
It takes a lot of generosity, and that's what these guys bring to it. There's no one more generous than actors. Even if it looks like, oh, they're making it about themselves,
right?
It takes something to get out in front of people
yeah.
and change your opinions and change your attitudes.
Yourself.
That's right.
And we are always willing
yeah.
to give.
And I think that the interesting thing about being in the ensemble is that we each play multiple roles. So, and some of our character changes are really quick, literally, you know, happening within seconds. So it becomes really, really interesting and really challenging. And it's one of the reasons I wanted to do this show is, you know, 'cause it's like, okay, ooh, I play five different people and mm-hmm. all through, and one of those people is myself. And like Deb said, it gets very meta because you're like, okay, I'm playing myself, but it's myself on stage as an actor in this play. It's not really me. So yeah. what does that mean? Like, you know, yeah. and having to figure that out. And of course, you know, we're also switching gender. You know, I mean, I play a 60-year-old, quite intoxicated black man. You know, like
not a stretch.
I actually thought like the inside of you was like a 60-year-old. Alcoholic black man.
That's what you thought?
Yeah.
Well, I did have grandfathers.
Yeah. And on that break, it's 44 minutes past the hour, and you're listening to Homegrown, brought to you by Blue Moon Diner. This is 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Stay tuned after the show for the Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Rick Moore. Their guest today is the whole Islamic Center of Central Virginia. I guess it's the whole center. And I guess they're talking about the current climate right now with the Muslim ban and the complete un-American actions of our current quote-unquote president. Hashtag resistance radio. Screw that guy. Back to lovely people. I'm just reintroducing the awesome Larry Golson and the lovely Deborah Ehrenstein. And you, sir?
Me, John.
Connor. John.
Yeah, and one thing I would note about this show that is fun to watch and others can comment on, there's an ensemble of four, two characters that never leave the stage on a very small stage.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
interesting how tight it is and how they have to move around without a lot of formal blocking to make it seem natural. And it's extraordinary to watch, and I think the audience will appreciate that.
Yeah, I hope they do.
And maybe it's time to give the plug of when is the show?
Yes.
Where is it? It's at Live Arts on Water Street.
123 East Water Street.
East Water Street. Opening Friday.
Friday,
February
3rd. Through the 25th.
Through the 25th. But not Mondays and Tuesdays, but every weekend, every Thursday and Wednesday, except for this week, and two Sundays, February 12th and February 19th.
Yep. So, Larry, let's talk for a minute about your process. How do I want to say this? What was your process in getting ready to direct this type of show? Because full disclosure, Larry and I have met. We've known each other for a minute. Because the show is so meta and deals with a lot of family issues and a lot of historical issues, like what kind of research, what kind of preparation did you do as a director to get ready to deal with all of these issues with this group of people?
Well, thanks. That's a great question. I wish I had a great answer, but I think what happened, the main thing was I read it. I mean, I was looking into it. It comes from a performance era. I love the work of Dario Fo and even local artists like Denise Stewart, who put themselves on stage and tell their stories. And I also used to tour for about 20 years as a person who did shows that were about that included his own life, and I got to make it up and change it as I was on while I was on stage. But then we went and saw a production of this at the University of Richmond, and it just changed everything for me, which was I just saw how hard it would be to make this real and believable for people.
Yeah.
And so that's then my work became about just sticking with that, sticking with this thing is unfolding in front of people, and the person on stage is telling us that this is their prepared show. And one of the cool things about it is the show starts to go off the rails. It doesn't go where she had planned it to go. Even though she hired this company of actors and got it all together, they don't always cooperate. Mom doesn't cooperate. So for me, and it reminds me of a show I worked on with Clinton once, Noises Off, it's got a linear trajectory, even though it's got cray-cray all over it. So finding out what that linear track is, and we had to make all sorts of agreements as a company. We could even ask, did the ensemble know the mom? Are they part of the same group of actors, or had they never met? And all sorts. We came up with all sorts of things that we created a backstory that would hold this in place. And so I felt like that was more of the work. It was in real time with the real company to come up with agreements that would hold this thing together. And what I'm seeing now is it actually is very tight. It's not like the University of Richmond show that made no sense. Right. Because I'd look at that young woman who said she was Lisa, and then the company came out acting, and I thought, those are not her people. Hmm. She never, you know, there's not. They didn't make it all work. It was the ideas of a director who liked having the company look like that and liked her looking like that. At least that's what I thought.
Right.
And I thought, okay, I got to get out of the way. But I don't want to let go. I can't let go, but I'm getting out of the way.
Right on.
So that's it. That's the work. And so I think it's kind of emotional.
Emotional time, definitely, yeah. Indeed. But continuing on that, like, I know being especially from, you know, a large African-American family, that sometimes there's been that mantra, like, family secrets stay in house.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, not everything needs to be spoken about to other people all the time. So, you know, from a director's standpoint and from the actors who actually, you know, went through this process of getting to know each other by divulging these family secrets, did you feel any, like, reticence or any, like, inner betrayal? Like, I can't believe I'm telling people, like, these things about my family, you know? Did you feel any type of, like, personal, you know, conviction, you know, against that or anything like that? Could you talk about that? You know, any, you know, especially you from having such a personal investment, you know, into the production, did you take anything from your personal life as like, maybe I shouldn't?
Well, I want to hear what Deb has to say too.
Absolutely.
I just want to say that coming from my background, that was a big thing for my family. You're not going to say that. You don't want anybody to know that. Those are family things. That would be disrespectful of your mother or your father, et cetera, et cetera. We don't do that. So there is something, but something changed in the world a long time ago, about 100 years ago in Western society, where we stopped thinking that there was an objective reality, like there's one truth and now get in line, find it out, but that everybody's view is actually valid. Now, we haven't caught up with that as people, but so my family hadn't caught up with that when I was growing up, but we're starting to look and say, hey, everybody's story is valid, and it's not a question of whether you were right or wrong. How you saw it is valid.
Right.
So if we start emphasizing that instead of, you know, hey, come on, that's not true. You're dissing people. You're not respecting. And just listen to people. It starts to shift. And if people can test that out and see it's trustworthy, then when they start to tell stories from their lives, they actually have memories and it fills out in a way that's actually satisfying and not shame-inducing.
Yeah, and it's not from a place of ridicule.
But that's
it's
easy for me to say as the leader. Let's hear what Deb has to say as one of the people who participated.
I've almost forgotten the question.
Did you feel like anything that you...
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't. And maybe that's because I'm still holding on to some family secrets.
That's okay.
Potentially, but...
tell us one.
I
over the air.
Wow. Well,
yeah.
You can't even remember.
That's right.
For podcast posterity.
Right.
No pressure.
Yeah, you know, I do feel there's a little bit of cringiness around the fact that not only is Lisa telling about her family, but she's telling it in front of her mom. So that's the piece of it I think that this play really brings. That's the risk she's taking. We've all talked about our crazy family with our friends, but then to do it with your parent there is really another level. So right. You'll see how that plays out when you
don't give that one
you
away.
See the show. Right. That's right.
All right. So thank you, Larry. Thank you, Deborah. Thank you, John, for all coming out, shouting out, showing at Live Arts Theater starting on February 3rd, going through the 25th. No Mondays, no Tuesdays. And it's going to be
thank you,
awesome
guys.
Show.
Thank you, David. We'll run interview.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Did you get
you
that
guys
on tape?
Are an asset
Did you get
to
that?
Charlottesville.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Thank
Did you.
You
get that on tape?
Love you, Leslie.
Lock that down.
Yes, I'll see you later for tech.
Right.
Okay.
Cool.
Bye,
great
guys.
Stuff.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good
Thank
job.
You so much.
Good to see you.
All right. All right.
Now,
can't wait
your
to,
mom?
You'll see her. You will meet her.
You
very soon.
You'll meet my
I assure
He's
you.
In the parking lot.
Right.
The boot on your tongue.
Right, mom, I love you. Please don't be mad at me. All right. So we're gonna go to Miss Queen Bee Leslie with her weekly rant.
Thank you, David. So, last Sunday night, I went to see Hidden Figures.
Hidden Fences? I'm sorry. I couldn't.
I had no idea what to expect other than friends who had told me it was really good. As my sweetheart and I settled into our seats, I was struck by how many people were in the theater. I mean, we had to look for seats, which is something I hadn't had to do for a while. As the story of these three women unfolded in front of me, I was also struck by one thing over and over again. Everything that they are worried about are the same things I am worried about. When these women became scared due to a broken down car and a police officer approaching, when they were passed over for promotions and not so subtly reminded of why, when they were faced with having to be cordial to people who wouldn't even use the same coffee maker, when they, due to continued pressure, downplayed their role in the completion of a task, being told over and over again that you don't belong, you don't matter, and you should be happy about the fact that we even let you be here. All of these things are things that I personally have had to deal with in my life, and I'm sure I'm not alone. I am absolutely positive that I am not the only Black woman who has, since the election results, felt an increased level of trepidation. Before this waste of skin took over, there was already a war on Black women being waged on several fronts at once. Now, just in a week, he has eliminated programs and promised to cut funding for programs that will make our lives as women even harder. This administration has made it perfectly clear. Women are not important. Our safety, our health, our concerns are not important to him. The only thing that does seem to be important to this vapid, misogynistic toddler is our vaginas. And he only cares about those as far as he can gain pleasure from them. He is the epitome of a sexual predator, planning, watching, and lurking. He has scoped us out, learned our routine, and then sidled up to us under the guise of a friend. He has learned the con of making us feel comfortable around him while he waits for the moment he can strike. He came to us in the guise of a friend. I don't know about you, but this is unacceptable to me. My body is not for anyone's control but mine. I deserve and will insist upon respect, equity, and consideration based on my talents and accomplishments. And how I pee has nothing to do with it. And if you try to give me less than I deserve, if you come over here with what you believe is a silver tongue and a large wallet, if you come over here buying me drinks and hoping I won't notice your hand on my knee, you better be prepared to go round the bend, because I do not stand alone. There are millions of women, not just here, but all over the world. There are millions of male allies. There are activists, homemakers, and CEOs that will stand up behind me and dare you to make a move. We will not be silent. We will not lay down easily as you begin what you believe
using alternative facts is a seduction. But what is an attempted rape of our freedoms? No, sir. If you grab my pussy, you better be ready, because I will be, and I won't back down. And that's the weekly rant.
Refer to him as the Sith Lord Darth Cheeto. We'd like to thank our guests on Homegrown, awesome Linda Zuby from Four County Players and Larry Goldstein, Deborah Ernstein, and John Conover from Live Arts. Coming up next is a Sunday morning wake up call with your host Rick Moore. Their guest today is the Islamic Center of Central Virginia, talking about basically everything that's been going on this week.
Please
stay tuned.
Please stay tuned.
Keep informed. Hashtag Resistance Radio. This is Homegrown. My name's David. That's Leslie, 94.7 WPVC. We love you very much. Have a good day. Bye.